This is Dr. Egon Spengler of the TV show Real Ghostbusters, and you're listening to This Week in Geek with Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew. Twig crew. Don't we have him in the containment system, Peter?
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and this is the topic show for the month of... kind of, sort of, March, last 3 hours, that's kind of how it goes, but it kind of ties into April 1st, which is the day of funny. We're going to be talking about the late and very great Harold Ramis, and I'm not alone as I track down through the Caddyshack ghost-busting Groundhog Days.
With Scotty Doo.
Woo! I'm excited to actually do this show. But I'm also sad to do the show. So for those of you that don't know, Mr. Harold Ramis unfortunately passed away in February. He died on February 24th, and it was complications from an autoimmune disease, vasculitis, I think is what it's called, and evidently he couldn't walk.
Aww.
Which is, I have...
This is saddening me.
See, I don't even know what this disease does. Well, I guess obviously it kills you. But, so Scotty threw this idea out at the end of, I think, the RoboCop franchise.
Yeah, it was the last one I said because of untimely occurrences. I said, why don't we do a Harold Ramis show next month? It seems very fitting.
And so here we are doing that. So I guess, what have we been up to over the last month, Scotty? I mean, you and I have had a chance to collaborate, actually, not too recently, actually.
No, I don't think. I've been talking to some people for some stuff for the site. So they give some new collaborations with some people we both know.
Which we may
see... I'm not going to say any...
Sorry? We may see the long-rumored anime series finally come to light.
It's like a fucking fine wine. The longer it takes, the better it'll probably taste and the more expensive it'll end up being.
You know what's funny? I consider the anime show to be our Ghostbusters 3. We say, confirmed, confirmed, confirmed. And it always ends up getting screwed up. But I hear there are some rumblings. I'm pretty happy about that.
There are some good rumblings, and you know who the person I'm talking about is, so...
Which, actually... Speaking of this person, this is something I have to pimp out. As you guys know, we are now, or this show is now sponsored by CNG Magazine. That's These Warriors Are Terrible. We did Neon Genesis Evangelion as our...
What?
Yeah, we did that for the month of April. And that was the RPG we played using GURPS 4th edition. Which, this is the single most expensive RPG I've ever played. Because somehow, between Julian Spillane's house and my house, I managed to lose all my GURPS books.
I can't believe that still.
I think, actually, me and Blair were talking. We wonder if someone broke into our car and stole my, like, backpack.
When do you think that would have happened?
It probably would have happened when we got home. I mean, we live in a pretty good area of Shelburne, but there have been car break-ins before, which really sucks. So now I don't have GURPS Ultra Tech, which goes for a retarded price online. $90.
Shit.
GURPS Hellboy, GURPS Cthulhu Punk. Although, a fan, this guy named Cam Dunn, He's from Alberta, Edmonton, I think, came out and really swung for the fences. He bought me the GURPS campaigns and the GURPS character books, so he replaced two of the GURPS books that I was missing.
Wow.
So thank you, Cam. This episode is dedicated to you, my friend. Thank you for...
Unless you don't love, like, Harold Ramis, which you should.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody should love Harold Ramis. So yeah, that's what we've been doing. I know content on the site's been slow over the last month, just because I know Mike and Laura are really busy, because it's
being on Big Brother and all.
Yeah, it's really cool to see them in the Big Brother audience, actually, because I always look for them. I can always find Laidman's head, and I look for Laura's hair. That's how I typically find them. Surprisingly, Big Brother Canada is really good this year, despite the fact that everybody on there is about the biggest asshole you could possibly imagine. Which really, really, really surprises me.
I should have been on that show.
You really should have. Guys, make Scotty apply next year. I guarantee you he'll make it. I'm trying to think of what else to mention. Doing a new rad soon on Metal Gear Ground Zeroes. AKA,
the rad will be longer than the actual game.
Pretty friggin' much. There are guys who could speedrun that in 6 minutes.
6 minutes. Did you watch that video, the 6 minute run?
No, but I'm going to later on. Like, I can maybe beat that game, the main Ground Zeroes mission. I could probably do that in 15.
Wow.
I mean, I take my time, though, because I want to get all the silent kills or the knockouts and all that crap. And it's just one of those things where I'm like, ugh. However, I'm also working on Infamous Second Son. It'll be the first Infamous game I've gone through to 100%. Wow, I'm playing it like Saints Row 4, and I'm ridiculously overpowered already, and I'm maybe on the fifth story mission.
Oh my gosh.
But it's so much fun. But anyway, guys, that's enough of that. So we are here to celebrate the late, the great Harold Ramis, Dr. Egon Spengler himself. But before we do, I do have to send a shout out to our wonderful sponsors that help make this show possible. People like offworlddesigns.com, oneupyourlife.com, which is Dustin Vancore's site, and he does a podcast called The Nerd Effect. Over there, we also have bigandtallmart.com, where if you use promo code GEEK10 on checkout, you get $10 off orders $50 or more. They supply all my Chunk and Dunk clothes. They're very good. And Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club at sfi.org. There will be a new Future Imperfect, because Q's been screwing with us on the records later on this week. So without any further ado... Oh, yeah, and I forgot GameAccess.ca. Good people over there. So anyway, without any further ado, here are just the facts on Harold Ramis. Harold Ramis, a writer, director, and one of the Ghostbusters themselves. In this month's Twig episode, we pay tribute to the funny man who gave us tears of joy and introduced us to the idea of a Twinkie 35 feet long, weighing approximately 600 pounds. Harold Ramis was born November 21st, 1944, in Chicago, Illinois, the son of Ruth and Nathan Ramis. Ramis would go to university in St. Louis and would begin writing parodies and would describe himself as, "In my heart, I felt I was a combination of Groucho and Harpo Marx, of Groucho using his wit as a weapon against the upper classes, and of Harpo's antic charm with the fact that he was oddly sexy. He grabs women, pulls their skirts off, and gets away with it." An odd fact about Mr. Ramis is that he was able to dodge the Vietnam War draft by taking meth. That's right, Egon was Breaking Bad. Harold would also work with the Second City Comedy Group while in Chicago, and this would open up doors for him, including his dream job of working for Playboy magazine as the jokes editor. Ramis would leave Second City for a little while, but came back and met some comedy legends such as John Belushi, Bill Murray, and the rest, they say, is history. A very successful run on SCTV and the National Lampoon's Radio Hour, and collaborations with Joe Flaherty, Christopher Guest, Gilda Radner, and many others. Ramis would have many memorable characters and skits on SCTV, most notably Officer Friendly, Board Chairman Alan Crazy Legs Hirschman, Home Dentist Mort Finkel, and his celebrity impressions on SCTV also included Mr. Spock himself, Leonard Nimoy. Ramis would leave SCTV to pursue Hollywood, and he would become a very successful person, both in front and behind the camera. Hits would include National Lampoon's Animal House, Meatballs, Caddyshack, and of course, Ghostbusters. Many people would call his Bill Murray comedy Groundhog Day to be his masterpiece. He would work with many great actors in the 90s and the 2000s, such as Brendan Fraser, John Cusack, Jack Black, and many others. His last film behind and in front of the camera would be Year One with Jack Black and Michael Cera, a film about the first year of humanity with a comedic twist on the Bible. The film, however, did not perform well at the box office. Harold Ramis leaves behind a legacy of laughs and a joy to millions around the world, and has left his mark on many careers and on Hollywood itself. We lost him on February 24th, 2014, and we remember him for what he did best, make us laugh and smile. So in this month's topic show, we pay tribute to Dr. Egon Spengler right here on This Week in Geeks, topic show for the month of March.
All right, everybody, welcome back. That was Just the Facts, and I'm really glad that Harold Ramis did give us the idea of the 35-foot-long Twinkie, and he also let me know and all my gym room buddies to never cross the streams.
Of course, it's an important safety tip that would result in total protonic reversal.
I think that's something every father should tell their son. Don't cross the streams.
Don't cross the streams, man.
Can apply to so many different things.
So, Harold Ramis, I can't believe how much stuff this guy has done and how much of his stuff I've actually seen. What was your first Harold Ramis movie? Mine was Ghostbusters.
Yeah, mine was Ghostbusters 2, because that was one of... Not Ghostbusters 2, but I mean as well. I think that was the one that, like, my parents would always put on for us to watch. And they're like, yo, it's Ghostbusters. And fucking watch that all the time. It was such a great flick. And I think... Sorry?
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was going to think after that was probably then Ghostbusters 2. And then I think I watched Caddyshack with my dad, and then he made me close my eyes during the exciting parts.
All the boobies. All the boobies. For me, like I said, it was also Ghostbusters. I think, I'm trying to remember whether I saw Ghostbusters 1 first or Ghostbusters 2 first. I'm pretty sure I saw Ghostbusters 1 first. And coincidentally enough, my favorite character in that movie was Dr. Egon Spengler. I liked him because he was the smart guy. He was the nerd. And one of the things I really got out of him is he had this very deadpan delivery.
Well, everything was very scientific, fact-based, and to the point.
There's one moment in that makes me lose my shit every time.
The slinky line. Please say it's a slinky line.
Not the slinky line, but they're in the Sedgwick Hotel, and Egon's walking with the PKE meter, and he's looking at the floor, following it. And there's a guy going into his room. And he scans him up and down with the PKE meter, and then he just pokes him. And the guy just so slightly leans back, and he keeps walking. It's stuff like that I wonder if it was, like, improv'd. And it's funny how much I really think Harold Ramis, I think, really got out of the whole Second City thing in Chicago. Because he's a great physical comedian, too. It's because he just has this look on his face where he can tell you most horrible news, and it's just so deadpan it becomes funny. Another great moment in Ghostbusters, once again where I lose my shit, also happening in the Sedgwick Hotel, is him, Ray, and Peter are in the elevator, and they're talking about their, like, proton packs, and they both switch, and Egon switches on Ray's proton pack, and you see him and Bill Murray just start to back up into the corner of the elevator. And just the look on Ramis's face, like, oh my god, I'm gonna get cancer. It's pretty friggin' hilarious. And then just generally the character of, like, Egon in that movie, I was really happy with. And so with Ghostbusters and Harold Ramis, I think that's probably one of his best collaborations, was him working with Dan Aykroyd.
I think him and Bill Murray always had, like, a great... He could always get a great performance out of Bill Murray, I felt.
And I think they worked together something like 6 times.
Know, like, Caddyshack, Stripes, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Groundhog Day. That's 5. I don't know what the other one would have been.
I'm looking through the...
I don't know if he was in Caddyshack 2, because I'd never watched Caddyshack 2.
I think it was Meatballs was the other one. Yeah,
Meatballs.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Which is another one that I haven't seen, but I've heard people often reference.
I used to always see Meatballs 2 for some reason.
Yeah, same here.
I'd watch that with my dad. You ever seen Meatballs 2 with the alien?
what?
Yeah, it's fucking weird. Like, an alien comes there, and I have no idea. Me and my sisters, like, always used to reference it as kids, because we always used to see this alien. And funny enough, Meatballs 2 was on, like, the Family Channel. I think that's where I watched it. It was weird. There's just a line where we used to reference where the aliens, like, just say, "You, someone farted," or something like that. We always thought it was fucking hilarious, because alien looked like a turd or whatever, but I digress.
There was... For some reason, I always remember the USA Network in the States replaying Meatballs 2, and if there was a Meatballs 3, or maybe I'm thinking of Porky's.
I think there's like 5 Meatballs or something.
That's so ridiculous. One of the movies I didn't see up until, I think it was 2 years ago, that I really wish I'd seen a lot earlier in my life, was the movie Stripes.
That's really good.
And it's about Bill Murray and Harold Ramis joining the army, which is kind of funny because, as I mentioned during Just the Facts, Harold Ramis took meth to avoid the Vietnam War draft. Just before he took his physical. He's like, "Well, if I get high, I'll fail. Seems like a good idea to me." So yeah, he indeed broke bad beforehand, which I always thought was really kind of hilarious.
That is absolutely amazing.
And it's just, it's funny all the stupid situations that, like, they get kind of put into in Stripes. And another one, I think I saw this one during college, was Animal House with John.
He was in Animal House?
He actually wrote it.
Oh, shit.
With, like,
Animal House is so good.
With, I'm trying to think. No, did he write it? Yeah. So anyway, that's another one that I enjoyed. And he was also part of the team that directed and I think wrote, what was it?
Year One.
That's another thing with his career. He has a lot of hit and misses. And Year One is definitely one of the one that is, oh my god, it is such a miss.
Not a bullseye hit?
Oh my, yeah, if shit is what he was intending to hit. However, and it's funny because he has a really great cast. He wrote it and directed it, but I don't know what happened with it. It just kind of fell apart. One movie that he directed that I also had a huge thing for back in the day was National Lampoon's Vacation. With Chevy Chase and everything. And you know what I found out? There's a 5th National Lampoon's starring Chevy Chase.
Really? Like,
yeah.
A recent one?
Yeah, I think it's called Road to Hell or something.
Oh shit, I think I know the one you're talking about. It came out like, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, hearing about it on TV, and it was like such a big deal.
And
it was like a family reunion or something.
Yeah, and they're going to go visit Rusty and his wife or something like that.
Yeah.
And I just never got around to seeing it. And it wasn't until I went to Wikipedia researching this show that I realized, wow, that's terrible. But anyway, I'm getting off topic here. So the movies that Ramis has directed, he's done Caddyshack, National Lampoon's Vacation, Club Paradise, Groundhog Day, Stewart Saves His Family. That's, I feel bad for him. Multiplicity, I feel bad for him. Analyze This. I thought that one was actually pretty funny. Bedazzled, which was in itself a remake of a movie that came out in the 60s. The Ice Harvest, which was surprisingly good. A John Cusack, Billy Bob Thornton movie. He did I think he did something with The Office on TV. And his final appearance behind the camera and in front of it was Year One.
That was his final one?
Yeah, and what a shitty note to go out on, because that movie, I think, made its money back by $2 million.
Like, he came into the industry with Caddyshack, which is, like, one of the most... Like, it's such a funny movie, such a classic film, and everyone was, like, so amazed by it. It's like, so many comedians, that's their go-to film. It really launched Rodney Dangerfield's career. And then he goes out on Year One.
Yeah, because it's weird, because like in Year One, for those of you that don't know, and believe me, there's probably more of you that don't than do.
Don't want to know.
It starred Jack Black and Michael Cera, and they play a couple of cavemen during literally Year One. And they get kicked out of their village because Jack Black accidentally burns it down by eating fruit from the Tree of Knowledge. and then they go to Egypt, or not Egypt, they go to Sodom and Gomorrah, they run into Cain and Abel, played amazingly by David Cross and Paul Rudd. It's kind of funny watching David Cross bash Paul Rudd's head in with a rock. And then Ramis himself stars as Abraham during it. And it's got this amazingly good cast in it, and a lot of people that he's worked with, such as Oliver Platt, who plays this greasy, fat dude. It's really weird, but it's pretty freaking hilarious. And basically how they get involved in all these adventures and how they're trying to there's this plot to overthrow the king and everything. And it's got some interesting ideas. Like there are some great moments in that movie, but it feels so disconnected. And this is when I think Michael Cera was on a hot streak, and this is one of the things that kind of cooled his career a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because it's funny, because Michael Cera, when he's on, he's really funny. But he plays the same character in every movie. Even Scott Pilgrim, he's the exact same character from...
He's George Michael.
Yeah, he's George Michael, or he's the character from fucking Superbad. He has two people. And Jack Black, you can tell he's trying to make this funny. Actually, I would honestly say the funniest part about Year One is the bloopers at the end. So sitting through an hour and a half of is probably cinematic shit.
Is it like Biodome with Pauly Shore?
I wouldn't call it that terrible. I think Year One, if it's on TV and you have nothing else going on besides scraping toe jam, why the hell not? And I don't get why Ramis's career was so much like a yo-yo when it came to his directing stuff. One movie that I really liked to his was Bedazzled. And I think that's more or less because of the cast, and I think he knew exactly what to kind of pull out of them. That was Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley. And Elizabeth Hurley at that time was really hot because of the Austin Powers thing. She'd become known as Hugh Grant's girlfriend a couple of years before. And she's just this incredibly sexy English chick. And the idea behind that movie is there's this guy named Elliot, and he sells his soul to the devil for 7 wishes. Inevitably, hilarity ensues. He wishes to be rich and powerful, becomes a Colombian drug lord. He wishes to be athletic and rich. He becomes this 7-foot giant basketball player guy with a small dick.
This sounds like the Wishmaster, but... the comedic version.
Yeah, but funny and less scary. Man, we should do something on bad horror movies. Maybe this year with James. Although I think we're doing Hammer Horror.
Doing Hammer Horror.
And it's so funny because this is when Brendan Fraser was doing The Mummy. He did Encino Man back in 95.
Is when he was hot.
Yeah. And genuinely, I think Brendan Fraser is really funny when you give him something to work with. And in this movie, Elizabeth Hurley plays his foil as the sexy devil. And she genuinely likes him. She's like, Elliot, I like you. And when you go to hell, you should probably have a friend like me in your back pocket. And I'm trying to think what else. Oh, he wishes that he was more in touch with his feelings to become a more sensitive and emotional man. He turns into this giant pussy who cries.
Literally or figuratively? Like, does he literally become?
He does not indeed become a large female organ. But no, he literally cries at everything. He sees a beautiful sunset. He sees a good-looking dog. He cries. And
a good-looking dog?
Yeah, he's like, it's so
There's
pretty.
Some questionable things here.
But yeah, he falls to pieces. And the woman's like, I want to be taken advantage of. I want people to tell me to shut the hell up. This has been a great 3 weeks, but fuck you. And basically it ends with him getting sand kicked in his face. I'm trying to think. He wishes to become the president of the United States, and he becomes Abraham Lincoln on the night of the John Wilkes Booth assassination. But inevitably he gets out of it by wishing for the girl that he's after, a woman named Allison, for her to have a good life. And the devil's like, well, fuck. You used your last wish in a completely selfless act of redemption. You broke the contract. you're free
don't
to go.
You like how if you're selfless in all these stories, you're like, okay, you've completely null and void our contract because you did something for somebody else.
See, I kind of like how it raises the question of what would you do if you knew you could get out of the devil's contract like that? Because in theory, as long as you really believed you were doing something good, but I guess in the back of your mind, you'd have that doubt, which would probably fuck you. And that's something else that I like. I mean, when Ramis works with the right people, he really brings out really good characterizations. Like in Caddyshack, for example, Bill Murray's character, the insane groundskeeper. I like how he directs him. Just he's like, you know what, Bill, go to town on this way. And I just love the physical performance he gets out of Murray and that, ooh, little gopher, look at this, I'm going to get you.
And the C4, he's the plastic explosives. And
he bites the head off the C4 rabbit and all this shit. Like, it's so crazy how what should be a stupid one-note joke becomes the part of the movie people remember the most. Because honestly, I could give a shit less about this kid trying to get this friggin' scholarship.
Yeah, I know. In that movie, I only care about seeing Rodney Dangerfield fuck with the judge. And that's all I gave a shit about. And seeing Bill Murray. Those are my two favorite parts of the film.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's the genius of Harold Ramis. When he works with funny people, he lets them work. And I think because he was a joke editor and he had that background from SCTV and Second City, I think he knows enough when to let people improv. And by doing that, there's just enough there that the performances come to life.
I know for Rodney Dangerfield, because Rodney Dangerfield really wrote his own material and stuff. Like he was given the free rein he wanted because that's how Harold Ramis knew Rodney Dangerfield would perform best, and they were just dying on set seeing Rodney Dangerfield do his gags, and that's what really, again, skyrocketed him and let him enter the film industry.
Yeah, and Rodney Dangerfield is one of those guys you can just trust. Like, I know you're not gonna fuck this up, sort of thing.
he's amazing.
He really is. Another movie I didn't get a chance to see, I saw trailers for it, and I can't believe this was his work. Stuart Saves His Family, and I think that was based off a character. Yeah, it was based off a stupid sketch on Saturday Night Live, where it was, it's that stupid asshole who'd be like, doggone it, people like me.
I've never heard of this character.
Oh my god. He's literally this self-help guru, and the skit was called Self-Affirmations with Stuart Smalley. And he would say, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. And it was just the beginning of that time where there would always be a Saturday Night Live movie, there would be Coneheads, there would be Wayne's World.
That was the 90s, man.
Which is really weird just to be able to spin that out. I mean, I kind of wonder if Ramis could have taken the officer-friendly character out of SCTV and turned that into me, or even an SCTV movie involving the plights of the television station, just have different characters react.
Almost like UHF?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd be great to have him as the station manager and have Bob and Doug McKenzie there. I mean,
that would have been such an amazing film.
See, Canada, why didn't we make this happen?
I used to watch SCTV all the time coming home from school.
I only started watching it because of doing research for the show, so I started looking up some of his various things on YouTube, and one he does, and it's right near the top of the results when you search Harold Ramis SCTV, is Famous Philosopher's School. And it's just him going, did you know you can make big bucks in the field of philosophy? And it's so fucking stupid. I love it because he's like, if you can finish this sentence, I think, therefore, I blank, most people can't do that. And I was like, geez, way to make fun of people who went into the arts and, you know, literature. But it works. It's so damn funny. Looking at over some of his other stuff, I want to talk about some. He's done a lot of writing. A lot. Let me see. Going through his career... he did stuff with the National Lampoon radio show, which I haven't listened to any of that, though I really am curious now. He did Animal House. He wrote that. He wrote Meatballs with a few other people. Caddyshack, Stripes, Ghostbusters, Back to School. I think I remember that one. Armed and Dangerous.
Oh, he did write Back to School. I was curious if he did.
He did write Caddyshack, too. And this one, I can't believe he wrote this, because this movie is so much shit. Even the Nostalgia Critic covered it, Rover Dangerfield, where Rodney Dangerfield becomes a dog who speaks in nothing but one-liners the entire movie.
Well, the thing is, I can believe that, just due to his relationship with Rodney.
Well, that's something I like about Ramis's career. He works with people that he knows all the time, so there's never a sense of, I'm just going to do this because. He works with people that he knows can perform. And
see, that's why I like when directors have favorites, or just any people have who they know they can work well together. Like, when you look at Wes Anderson, like, he has basically his pool of
people that he'll go to.
And they always give great performances. Same with, well, even just how Tim Burton always uses Johnny Depp. I was going to say great performances, but then...
Once again, it's like hit or miss.
Yes.
Another one that he wrote, and this strikes very near and dear to my heart, was the Ghostbusters video game. He wrote that with Dan Aykroyd.
I was really amazed to hear that he did that.
Yeah, because it's a video game. How many people come out of, you know, this awesome film career to write a video game? And this is, often people say, this is as close as we're going to get to Ghostbusters 3, because this was based on some ideas they'd had since the early 90s for Ghostbusters 3. And it's performed admirably in the game. And the game itself is legitimately really funny. There are some really good Ghostbusters moments, and you're never overshined by Ray, Egon, or Peter, or even Winston in it. Another one that he wrote, and this one, he worked with this guy. I'm trying to think if this was the first time collaboration. I'm just looking at it now. Yeah. He worked on, as I mentioned, the movie Year One. He worked on that with Lee Eisenberg and Gene Stupinski. And that, I'm just looking at the times he's worked with different people, why the movie's crap. However, though, he didn't work with Danny Rubin. That was for Groundhog Day. I just want to see what else Danny Rubin has done.
He
has not done a lot of things. He was an American screenwriter, and he does some stuff, but he wrote the screenplay for Groundhog Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he hasn't done much since, which is kind of amazing. And I'm just trying to look through Ramis's career here that kind of jumps out at me. It's with his career that he's had so many hits, so many successes, that the bad ones really kind of stand out. And this movie, I'm surprised it didn't do better than what it did. This movie I'm going to talk about now was The Ice Harvest. And this movie is about John Cusack and Billy Bob Thornton. And they're crooked lawyers or something. Either way, they're criminals.
And they're scumbags.
They work for Randy Quaid. And what happens is, on Christmas Eve, they skim $2 million. They got it in this duffel bag or whatever in the back of their car. And they're like, all right, we're going to leave town tonight. You just need to sit quiet for a few hours. And John Cusack's character, he's this nervous, neurotic guy. He always has to be moving or always doing or saying something stupid. And he's likable enough. And Billy Bob Thornton's character is playing it cool. He's like, all right, just sit, relax, I'll come back for you. So Where does John Cusack's character go? He goes to the strip club and decides to comp the dancer's fee for her to appear on stage, which is like $100. And he comps people's drinks. And he keeps calling Billy Bob Thornton's character, saying, "Hey, man, there's these guys looking for us," which these goons start showing up at the strip club asking about him. And he's like, "Oh, shit, man, we got to go. We got to go now." But because it's the wintertime in Kansas, which is where the movie takes place, it's a brutal winter. So everything is iced and sleeted over. And Billy Bob Thornton's character is like, "We can't go until the roads clear up." So what happens over the course of the movie is a series of misadventures. And it's actually pretty dark because you find out in the end, by the way, spoilers, you've had since 2005 to actually see this movie. Billy Bob Thornton was going to betray him. And he was going to take the money for himself and run off with a stripper that John Cusack's character had a thing for. So the body count in this movie actually goes up quite a bit because they managed to kill some of the enforcer guys that were coming after them. Billy Bob Thornton's character murders his own wife.
Oh, fuck.
It's so fucked. And they shove, I think it's Jeff I don't know if it's Jeff Garland or who it is.
Jeff Goldblum.
Gets shoved inside a trunk. And Billy Bob Thornton's character, he's like, I don't remember which end your like head's at, so I'm just gonna shoot both of them. And what happens is they get out on this dock because they want to dump the body because Billy Bob's character's like, "I'm gonna hear you drown." And the character inside the case, who is this goon who was sent after them, breaks out of the case because when he shot the box, or it broke the lock. So the guy gets out, shoots Billy Bob Thornton's character because he had a gun shoved somewhere. He's like, Where was that gun?" He's like, "Don't ask." And Billy Bob Thornton's character can't swim. So the body of the goon goes in the water and it knocks Billy Bob Thornton's character in there as well. And John Cusack's character is like, "Well, I could save you," but he's like, "You were going to kill me," because the goon had said, "Don't trust him. He's going to kill you as soon as he's done with you." So what happens is John Cusack goes, "Well, you were going to kill me, so you're going to sit there and drown in that water all by yourself." He's like, "No, wait, hold on a minute." Goes up to the car, grabs the wife's corpse, throws it in the water with him. He's like, "I didn't want you to like die alone." And Billy Bob character's like, "Oh, save me!" And no. And he's like, "You want to save me?" And John Cusack's character's like, "Why? I know where the money is." And he's like, "Well, nah." And what happens after that is, during the movie, and I should have mentioned this earlier, I'm terrible at explaining things like this.
Yeah, that's all right. But I think everyone gets the gist.
He's a terrible father because this other character that he meets earlier in the movie, Oliver Platt's character, is married to his ex-wife and his kids. And he just realized how much of a shithead he's been to his wife. So now he could have made his kids' lives better. He could have done all these wonderful things. So he goes to a gas station in the middle of the night and buys those chintzy gas station type toys, right? Like bubbles and the little dolls and all that shit. Stocking stuffer type stuff. And he breaks into the house and leaves them under the tree because, you know what? He's got to leave town. He's got a body count now. So he goes back to the strip club to meet the stripper so they can leave town together. Randy Quaid's character drops in, holds the stripper hostage, saying, "I know you stole from me, and now I'm going to kill you and her." So a fight ensues, and Randy Quaid gets his head blown off with birdshot from a shotgun, covers the stripper in gore, and she's like, "Ew, did you have to shoot him?" He's like, "Ugh." So he's like, "All right, we're going to leave town because that's what we have to do." And he starts putting it together. He's like, something doesn't seem right about this. So he goes into her closet because he's looking for... I can't remember why he's looking in there. But he sees the bag from Billy Bob Thornton's car that had the money in it. And he's like, what the hell? And he opens it up and the money's there. And he's like, what the fuck? And he thinks back to conversations he overheard Billy Bob having on the phone. It was this character all the time. So the character, the stripper comes out. And she's like, well, here I am. And she's dressed in, like, a bathrobe or something. And you think they're like, gonna fuck or something. So they embrace. She's got a straight razor behind her back. She intends to kill John Cusack's character and take the money. He shoots her in the gut with a pistol. And he's like, well, I've killed everybody I've ever liked. And this town sucks. So he leaves with the drunk Oliver Platt character, and the movie actually has multiple endings. I only saw the one. The owner of the strip club is going out of town, and he runs into him on the way out of town because it's Christmas. They're going to go to Six Flags, right? And the owner backs over him. Like, he's writing something on the back of this broken down camper because he needs gas or something. And he's like, yep, here you go. The car won't start. He decides to be a good guy and push it. Guy doesn't see him, backs him over. Now, I think in one edit, he actually dies, but he doesn't die. He's like, ugh. So the movie ends. He's got the money. He's leaving town. And I don't know, just I had a lot of fun with it, although evidently it didn't do well. This movie had a budget of $16 million, only made $9 million. And now, according to the Wikipedia article for this, Bill Murray was offered a role in this. And the chick that played Persephone in The Matrix was supposed to play the stripper character. And I kind of wish I'd actually seen that instead of the girl they got to play here. But I don't know. I liked it. Now, it seems... A lot of people didn't like it, except for Roger Ebert. He gave it 3 out of 4 stars. And I say it's probably one of the better movies I've seen in a while for him. Now that I've took up a good chunk of padding talking about that particular movie.
Would you say that would be one of your favorite Harold Ramis films?
I really
not counting Ghostbusters, because we all know we all love Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I would
say. Or you think it's the most unexpected one?
I'd say it's the most unexpected one because it is dark. I mean, the fact that there's such a body count, they're dealing with strippers, they're dealing with the criminal underworld, and this is something you really don't... I mean, it really kind of stands out when I look at the other movies that he's done. Because they're all... I wouldn't call them all lighthearted comedies, but there's something you could almost take... You could take a teenager to easily. Ice Harvest is a little bit more mature sort of thing. It's the kind of movie you could probably watch with your parents if you were older. Definitely not when you were 14. Maybe when you were like 18, 19, 20 sort of thing. And I'd say for my top 3 Harold Ramis movies, I'd probably go The Ice Harvest, Bedazzled, and Ghostbusters, and I'd say my bottom 3 for him would probably be Year One, Multiplicity, and Stuart Saves His Family. And Multiplicity, I thought should have been funny, because that had Michael Keaton, and he basically clones himself. But problem is, every time he clones himself, he gets stupider, and it turns out it falls apart right near the end, and I didn't like it. I remember seeing that back when I was in high school, thinking, man, this has such a cool idea. Why does it fucking stupid? And this was when the Jurassic Park was still being talked about. Basically, when the word cloning was everywhere at that particular time. I mean, it's like the flavor of the month for like movies. What about yourself, Scott?
I'd have to say my top 3 films, obviously Ghostbusters at number 1, and then number 2, I'd probably throw Caddyshack. And then, like, for my third... See, I kind of have, like, a toss-up between Stripes and Groundhog Day. I'd probably put Groundhog Day, because I really, really like Groundhog Day. the ending got to me. I'm an emotional suck. I teared up a bit. Just seeing, like, he's like the asshole the whole time, and then he has, I don't even know how much time has actually passed, but in much time for him to become, like, a virtuoso in everything possible. But I don't know, it's just that love story got me at the end. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He made a nice sculpture of her.
I like the fact that he got the chance to make it right. Like, basically, every time something went wrong, he'd get a chance to redo it. And I like that idea, actually. The idea of redemption, but you get a few tries at it.
The thing is, and the thing I liked about that film a lot is the fact, like, the way it was, the way he evolved over that time is how most people probably would have. Whoa, I can do anything I want in the beginning, and there's no repercussions. So he tricks that girl, trying to figure out what high school she went to, so then he can try to bang her the next day by being like, hey, it's me, remember grade 12 English class, yada, yada, yada. Oh my gosh. And then, like, I love when he steals the goddamn groundhog and then drives into a quarry. And the truck blows up, and all you hear is the groundhog scream. Like, but then you just see, like, he tries his hand first at trying to be with her, with Rita, and it's, he's just trying really hard, kind of thing, at copying everything she likes. And then it gets to the point where he really starts to care about her, so he actually starts to learn new things, to try to impress her with what he can do, and then ends up working out in the end.
What was I gonna say? See, that's a movie I wish I had a chance to watch before the show, and I'm trying to remember if it was on Netflix or not. I think it was.
No, it's not.
It's not. Shit.
It's not even on. It's not on American either.
Bastards. Although I was really surprised that there's a movie and that Harold Ramis has a role in, and I really liked it because it's such a short cameo. It's one of my favorite movies, surprisingly. It's a movie called
RoboCop.
Yeah, don't I wish. The movie Airheads. Once again, Brendan Fraser. And I kind of wonder if this was maybe the reason he wanted to work with Fraser for Bedazzled. Airheads is about Brendan Fraser, Steve Buscemi, and Adam Sandler. They're this band, and they take over a radio station demanding that their demo be played on the air so they can get signed to a record label. And Harold Ramis plays a cop disguised as a record executive halfway through the movie. And he comes up to the doors and he's like, here, sign this contract. We'll sign you. You get like a 3-album deal. And Brendan Fraser's character's like, you're a butt puppet. And that's one of my favorite insults I've ever heard. Or Dick Cheeseburger or something like that. Just all these really, 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 really weird terms. And that's the thing, too. Like, when he acts, he's got some pretty funny roles. Another one that I liked him in was, let me see, obviously Stripes. Pretty funny guy.
See, Stripes, again, he's delivering his very intelligent and fact-based character, which I think, due to his deadpan delivery, he really stuck with. Because, again, he's starting off as a teacher who's still kind of, he's got some humor towards him, but still almost that authoritative figure, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that they had such a good cast in that movie, I mean,
I know.
Bill Murray, they had John Candy, John Larroquette, Judge Reinhold.
Half the cast of SCTV.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Dave Thomas and Joe Flaherty, who is an underappreciated comic genius.
Oh, he is so funny. Well, on a side note, I saw when Mark Meer, like, he does stuff with him in the theater, and I was like, that's amazing. This guy is so funny. He really is underappreciated. Because I remember him on SCTV playing he played all these oddball characters, shit. But he is really funny. But yeah, he's not as widely appreciated as he should be.
One of the things I like about Joe Flaherty, and it's such a specific thing, it's the rhythm in which he speaks. And
I know exactly what you mean.
And it's just, it makes every joke.
Well, let's do this.
Yeah, it's like everything he says is like 10 times funnier. And also, surprisingly, in Stripes, and I didn't know this till just now, Bill Paxton was in it. Fucking Hudson from fucking Aliens. That blows my mind. I'm just saying. I think What, actually, here's a question for you, Scott. What movies do you think he'll, movies and roles he'll be remembered for?
Without a doubt, it's going to be Caddyshack and Ghostbusters.
Well, it's actually kind of awesome and kind of sad at the same time. If you look on his Wikipedia page, there they put a shrine outside the Ghostbusters firehouse after he died. There are Twinkies, Nestle Crunch bars, and a box of Cheez-Its as well.
Did anyone put, like, straightened out Slinkies?
I don't see any, but that's not to say that it didn't happen. And that's kind of cool. And the fact that that firehouse number 8, I think it is, put out, they have the Ghostbusters 2 sign still in there. So for a couple of days, I think, or maybe a couple of weeks, they put out the Ghostbusters 2 fire sign for them.
That's so awesome.
And it's kind of funny that I never realized how many lives he touched. Because I remember after he died, on Facebook, especially in the Ghostbusters community, how many people were drawing tributes to him. And there's some really good artwork. The one that I remember the most, and I really hope you'll find a way to put this in the episode art. There's a picture of the Ghostbusters standing over a trap.
Oh my god, I saw this too.
And him just waving by. And I like that. And that was, I think that's the time when I got a little bit choked up. Because I'm thinking, I never even thought of it that way. Or there's another one where it's Bill Murray's character handing him a Twinkie and he's the ghost. And he's like, you've earned it. And that's another great piece of, like, artwork that kind of came out of his death. And a lot of celebrities have shared their thoughts and feelings. I mean, having worked with him, I'm pretty sure Jack Black said something and some other ones. And I kind of wish I had specific examples to pull. I know Dan Aykroyd said some stuff, and so did Ivan Reitman. I know after he died, there was more talk of Ghostbusters 3, the movie that doesn't exist. And surprisingly, Ivan Reitman pulled out of it, but Dan Aykroyd's still there. And he's saying, I want to make the movie Harold would be proud of. And the fact that Ramis is now gone, I kind of wonder if this is when the conversation for a new Ghostbusters should stop.
Yeah, I really think it should. Because it should be something Ramis and Aykroyd actually work on together. Like, the game, again, like you mentioned earlier, is the closest thing you're going to get because it's actually material they both wrote and they both wanted to be in the Ghostbusters universe.
Yeah, and everything that could be is now gone because Murray is hot and cold to the project depending on which way the wind's blowing that particular day.
And I don't think he'd want to do it without Ramis either, though.
Now, supposedly there was a feud between him and Ramis. I didn't read too much into it because I'm thinking I can't see those two not getting along. But I remember reading something that Bill Murray came to visit him not too long before he died. So if anybody has any info on this, I'd love to hear from you. So
what if Bill Murray actually just emailed us and was like, okay, Mike and Scott, let me tell you the real story of what happened.
See, and you know what the funny thing is? Bill Murray's the kind of guy who would do that. Which is really funny, because he stopped a bank robbery last week.
What?
Yeah, on like Nerd News, he was walking down the street, and a guy stopped him who thought he was the character from Lost in Translation. He had a conversation with him, and then the cops tackled him. Pretty funny shit. And then Bill Murray, you always see on BuzzFeed or Instagram, hey, I hung out with Bill Murray tonight, or he's the kind of...
He ate one of my French fries.
Yeah, and he's like, no one's ever going to believe you. I mean, shit like that. I mean, Bill Murray's...
That's power.
He's become this internet legend just by being weird. But I think one of the roles I think he'll definitely be remembered for will always be Ghostbusters, because that character has become so well known and in so many different mediums, and the fact that it inspired an entire generation of young kids to pursue sciences, stuff like that too, because people thought Egon was cool. Egon got, I think he got probably some of the most time in the Ghostbusters television series. I can think of a number of Egon-centered episodes. In fact, man, I kind of wish I'd gotten Maurice LaMarche to share his thoughts as Dr. Egon Spengler for this, because we interviewed him about 4 or 5 years ago. But
that'd be surreal.
That'd be weird. Ghostbusters will be the thing I remember him for, and probably the Ice Harvest, to be honest with you. I mean, I liked Caddyshack. I wanted it to make me laugh more, but the Ice Harvest resonated with me more. Okay, here's a question for you. If you could wipe one movie from his career, which one?
Ghostbusters. No, probably Year One, because I don't want him to die on that shitty fucking film, being his last film.
Mine is Rover Dangerfield.
See, but that Rover Dangerfield is fucking, like, weird, but it's, like, hilarious. It's almost like The Room.
It's something you have to experience once.
I think I had that. I had that VHS as a kid.
Oh my!
My mom had, like, buying all these, like, Don Bluth films and stuff, and she's like, "Hey, it's Rodney Dangerfield." And she bought it for me as a kid. I think I used to watch it a lot too.
Because
my dad wouldn't let me watch any of Rodney Dangerfield's actual films.
For some reason, I really want to buy a poster to that movie because it's so fucking terrible. But, oh my god, it's such a bad movie. Yeah, honestly, if I could wipe movies from his career, it would be Rover Dangerfield and Year One. Or if I could resurrect Harold Ramis. Okay, do Year One again. Don't fuck it up this time. I think that movie had potential, and I think that's what I saw in Ramis, is there was such potential in the idea. Kind of like Bedazzled. I think Bedazzled is I would call it underappreciated in his career, but I think that's more for the performances more so than anything else. Plus Liz Hurley is fucking hot in that movie. But anyway,
oh, yeah.
I think we've taken this as far as we possibly can. Harold Ramis, we are gonna miss you, and you leave behind a wonderful family, and I think they will live up to your legacy. So hopefully they'll get involved in comedy in some capacity, but the world misses you, and well, you've definitely earned your well-deserved rest. So coming up on the show next month, for the month of April, technically, we're going to be talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's right, we're going to be looking at Captain America, as Captain America the Winter Soldier opens up in theaters on Thursday night/Friday, and it's going to be expanded upon in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television show. How is it going to tie into Age of Ultron, Avengers 2, and all the Phase 3 movies that are currently being shot?
How's it going to tie into the Justice League?
It's funny you mention that, because Captain America 3 and the Justice League come out on the same day, or at least in the same 2-week period.
Coincidence? I think not.
Because Marvel's not afraid of like Warner Brothers, in the very least.
They shouldn't be.
And because the only character that's been really super successful is Batman. Superman, I mean, even Man of Steel was like, people either loved it or hated it. The Nolan movies for Batman, everybody likes. But either way. So yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about on the show next week. Next month. Obviously, Nerd News on Friday. I'm trying to think what else we got coming up this month. There should be a new Last Exit to Ponyville. There is a rad coming up later in the week. A new prototype is being recorded tomorrow. And basically, keeping busy with the show, trying to make sure we get as much content to you, the lovely people of the interwebs. So for This Week in Geeks topic show, we have been...
Scotty Doo, and I'm all right. Don't nobody worry about me.
And I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I am indeed a Twinkie that is 26 feet long, weighing approximately 600 pounds.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it!
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face! And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join... Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are
you?
Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.